Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You're always wonderful.
Absolutely.
Gave us a big, at a meeting yesterday, gave us a big crop nutrient update. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. thanks for inviting me finally.
Oh gosh, I missed you one time on a distribution list 4 years ago.
That's it hurts, Sal.
We'll put that in the question of the day someday.
Deep. It's right here. Yeah. Knowing I was left out.
Well, we got a special guest with an employee spotlight today, Ben Schutte. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
And before we do introductions too much, we have to do the first thing, and that is the question of the day, the fan favorite. So, Ben, tell us the question of the day is tell us about your worst home improvement story or experience.
Probably. I don't know. I kind of thought long and hard about this because over the years, we haven't really done a whole lot of home improvements. I mean, we did some add-ons and stuff to our old house, but the one my wife and I kind of thought, because I had to go to her for some advice.
But nice plug. She'll probably, you know, they can, this goes out on the net.
Edit that out. Well, we had added on to our house years ago, and the bricklayers had come in, and I had a spot in the yard I was composting. I put some pallets together to maintain it. And that it's kind of a small project me and the kids are doing, you know, table scraps and whatnot and yard waste. So bricklayers came, and I got home and noticed they had took it upon themselves to break down the pallets and use them to walk through the mud.
So out of your compost pile?
Yeah.
they took your project.
I had a decent project with the kids and built this thing, and they had to cut wires. They took it apart and used those pallets as to walk through the mud.
So there goes the science project.
Yeah. Was pretty upset about that because, you know, it's just a kid project, and here they took it upon themselves. And not even asked. I mean, I would have found them 100 pallets somewhere else, but so, you know, them and had another one too. We were staining, I was finishing our basement, staining some tongue and groove wood that I was putting on the ceiling. And, lo and behold, at some point in time, kids let the dog in and the dog had stepped across the stain.
Oh, no.
We didn't notice it until I put it on the ceiling. And now there was paw prints all over.
Yeah, that's a funny story. So you get,
and you don't notice that until the light's right and you look up and,
got a dog running across the ceiling.
Yeah. So just kind of little things like that that's happened over the years. But
that's good. So. Jeff, you're a crafty guy.
No, I'm not handy. That's why I have stories. But, you know, I've got a story about, and I hired a professional. So we're remodeling the, you know, the bathroom for the kids. He's putting, you know, took the tub out. We put a shower stall in, you know, tile and retile the floor, do all that stuff, cool pattern. And the last thing he's doing, he's putting the plumbing in, doing some of the plumbing stuff, all the tiles laid, you know, the purple primer for PVC pipe. He dumped the whole bottle right in the middle of the floor.
No way.
It stains everything.
It doesn't come. It'll never come up, right?
So he got a lot of it up. He had to, you know, redo all the grout work and stuff. But and I'm sitting there thinking, that's a rookie mistake that I would make. You don't really see the professionals usually do something like that. But yeah, he dumped a whole thing of the purple primer all over.
Oh my gosh.
So
still there today? If you know where to look.
If you know where to look, you can you can see a tinge of it. But
put a floor mat over.
Yeah, that's close enough. Yeah.
Well, I think I'll go back several years from mine, and I got the bright idea. I was going to use a barn siding and put a barn siding downstairs in the downstairs living room. And, of course, it's old white oak, right? White oak barn siding. And it was as hard as concrete. If you know what oak is like, if you just...
You'll pre-drill those holes, won't you?
You know it. And... So I started off, and you know how you find out if you have cheap drill bits or not is you try to pre-drill holes, and of course I was just breaking those; they just snapped. And then I got concrete nails, tried to use those,
Were you shooting them or you?
No, that rich people have the guns. I didn't have the guns. That'd be a nice thing to know though in the future. But I was just pounding them with a hammer, and I would drill the halfway in the hole, and had to go get some expensive bits to make that work. And so pre-drill, then take the concrete nail and pound it in the rest of the way. So there's a spot in the house, if you know where to look, when I finally just lost it. I was so mad and couldn't get the concrete nail to go through, and I just pounded away at that board. And it's in the downstairs bathroom, but I left it up there, bunch of hammer dents in the board where I probably lost my religion a little bit there. It was about 2 a.m. and tired of messing with it. But
you know, that hard wood and stuff that's been dried out, and you know, you're sitting here and you think you can put a screw into it, and the screw is almost all the way in, and then right at the end, it twists the head off.
Oh, that's locust.
Yeah.
Locust posts are the worst. Those things are like iron.
That's just for guys who won't go buy fence posts because they're too tight.
Poor, man. Not tight, poor. Well, Ben, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about you and your family. Just kind of introduce us and how you got here today was through your career path.
Okay. So been married to be 18 years in October. So that'll be coming up. Got 4 kids, 16, 14, 11, and 8.
11 so and 8.
2 boys, 2 girls. Keep us very busy. Nice that the one is driving now. That is helpful to run kids around or help brothers and sisters or just, and they're all into everything, tennis, basketball, volleyball, school activities and whatnot. I'm 42. I grew up on a dairy farm. We milked 3 times a day. That's a life. If you don't know that life, then you don't know how struggling it could be and hard work it is. I was talking to a guy the other day about, you know, we had a night shift that started at 8:30 and it got over 1:30. So my dad started at 4. So, you know, there was only a few hours a day that there wasn't somebody up.
Wow.
And a lot of times there was, if there was cow trouble or something, usually they took care of that. So we grew up on that dairy, worked that
for a while. So it was 24 hours a day.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. We had one hired hand that did the milking. And us kids got kind of stuck usually with the night shift.
How many brothers and sisters?
I'm 1 of 4. I got an older brother and twin sisters that are older than me. And we worked all the time on the farm.
So you're the baby of the family?
I am the baby, yeah.
So maybe we should bring these siblings in. And
that would be a better.
We'll find out how hard he worked. Did he work as hard as Ben says he worked? And what their opinion of that is.
I was a baby, so I didn't have to do much.
Oh.
No.
I bet they would tell that story, too.
That would be a long episode. It'd be worth your time because we get, you know, it's pretty. You know, dairy farm kids are a different breed. They were then, they are now.
You learn to drink out of mud puddles and lick salt blocks and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You're immune to everything.
That's right.
So, you know, in 04, my dad decided he had a brother had passed away, and he decided he didn't think he wanted us to work that hard anymore. So he just retired from milking cows, and we all got a call from my mom, and she said, in 3 days, the cows are leaving. You need to come say goodbye if you want to see them go.
3 days.
So they had made a decision that they didn't want that to continue. And we still row cropped and still do today. My brother does all the farming. My dad's fully retired, and dad and mom, you know, mom worked on the farm. Just, you know, she didn't work off the farm, so she was around a lot too, taking us to school and getting us up and milking the night shift when we didn't have a hired hand to do that. So a lot of that work ethic, you know, pushed through into what I do for the last, you know, 20 years after that, 25 years. So,
so what was that like on day 4 for your family? That had to be
weird.
Huge change.
You know, when the parlor stopped, I would have been 18, no, yeah, no, 21, I think. Do some math, but it was weird. You know, it was kind of like, I mean, I knew the work, how it was, and I don't know if I really didn't really feel like I wanted to do it then. So at the time, it wasn't a big deal. Like, it still hurt because you put a lot of time and effort in it. But now that I got kids, I wish it was kind of still going. I mean, send them over there and feed the calves and, you know, just to build that work ethic that we had, that my brother and sisters carried till now. So, it's a different world.
Yeah. If you grew up on a dairy farm, have you ever slept past 5 o'clock in the morning? You probably never.
Not that I didn't want to, but if you weren't, if it was past probably 7, Dad was in there getting you up. I mean, you had chores to do on the weekend and like I said, cows got to get milked. Vacation wasn't a real thing for us. So when I got married, it was interesting. My, you know, that side of the family, they traveled and they family vacations and all that was very weird to me.
On the wife's side.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm still learning to live that long life because I don't know, we're homebodies. We don't like to travel because we typically work. So, but no, kids are good. They're all kind of doing their own thing right now. So it's good.
And, so you came to Premier Ag from, what was your work history before? You've got a lot of, operations.
Yeah. So I worked for a local farmer, a family farm, started there out of school, and just kind of worked my way up. When I finished there after 19 years, I was vice president operations. So I filled various roles through those 19 years from drying corn to, you know, financial side, HR, safety, a lot of training, a lot of operations, hiring and firing and all that stuff. So, and I think, you know, after 19 years, it was just time to go. So, I learned a lot. I met my wife there. My mother-in-law was working there. I can still tell you the spot where I met her on that farm. So, you know, you grow, I grew there, you know, so 19 years, long time, but, I learned a lot there, which takes me to here. So I feel like I can bring a lot of that knowledge and I guess, growing personal relationships with people, just being a boss, being a mentor, carry that through even to the customer side of it.
Very good.
So you come to Premier, just tell us a little bit about your role.
I'm an agronomy accounts manager. So day to day, dealing with growers, just building that relationship, answering questions, diagnosing problems pretty much every day. A little less on the weekends, but still the same. I enjoy that. I've always been a problem solver. Just being there, helping them, taking the phone call, you know, and I kind of joke around. My son was riding with me one day and phone rang and it comes across the truck, you know, and says who it is. And I usually give it couple rings and then I answer and talk to the guy for 20 minutes. And my son's like, why did you wait so long to answer that phone call? I said, well, with every grower is unique in their own business. So I said, it takes me, like, I have to get out of that mind of what I'm thinking about then and change it to that guy, you know, just so, because there's so many, get prepared for what I think he's going to answer. And I never, you know, growing up on a farm, managing a farm, it was, you kind of had the same kind of customs every year you did. Well, now you've got multiple growers with different unique ways they do it from the way they plant to the way they harvest to spray to chemicals they use, their programs. So you almost got to switch, you know, right before you talk to them. And I like that. It's different. Yeah. I hate stale. So.
So yeah. Basically now you're calling on farmers. So you're on the opposite side of the fence, what yes. you used to be.
Well, 100%.
You used to have reps calling on you and now you're the rep calling on them. How's that transition and how's that impact how you react with your customers?
You know, I know when the busy time is and I know when I didn't want to be hounded. So I kind of bring that on my side and I feel their pain, you know, I mean, the management role that I had was back office stuff as well as, you know, this crop isn't doing well. It hurts me too. You know, I took pride in that. You don't do something for 19 years and not feel a little bit
sure.
ownership in it. So when I'm talking to a grower or a guy, and you know, he calls me and he's worried about the markets and the prices, and I kind of feel like I know where he's at. I mean, I've been on that side. I've had those phone calls, and you know, when you gotta tighten the belt and move guys around, or hey, we don't need you anymore. That's a hard conversation to have, and guys are, you know, that's their mind right now of what can I do? Well, I've been in that situation, you know, especially it seems like I kind of moved to the younger generation of the farmer. It seems like since I took this job, a lot of growers' sons are my age, and I feel like I gravitate to them, and, you know, more of a friendship, and growing that, is key to success in this business to me. I mean, basically building a friendship, you know,
sure,
keeps them calling. So,
well, that may be a good lead into next question. What's one of the most rewarding parts of your job?
seeing guys succeed. You know, you sit down, you spend a lot of time building their program in wintertime, prepay time, and then they put all this trust and, you know, money into you as their account rep to successfully lead them through the season, spring, with questions. You know, it's, where should I put this hybrid? Where should I put this variety? What's your recommendation on weed control? And then carrying them through crucial fungicide times, and then running with them in the combine this time of year, and taking the weight buggy around and saying, you know, hey, let's weigh some beans and see, you know, the success you had. And I always love that. In my last job, I always made it a point to take that last load to the elevator. You know, I was there all the time anyways, but it was good for me to pull that last load to the farm. And I would do a little Facebook post, cause I ran our Facebook page, and, you know, just thanking everybody for their time. Cause I mean, without them and without our customers, we don't have jobs.
Yeah.
You know, so, I miss that end of that job, like doing the harvest, cause that was always a good feeling for me. And when that last load come in, you knew tomorrow was starting over the next year.
That's right.
And that's way, you know, you want to help these guys get through and, you know, have that conversation in the combine. And I push some of our new account managers to do that, you know, just go ride with them, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Take them a snack and a drink and sit in the cab and, you know, just have a conversation.
Ben's been such a good role model. And, you know, for all of us is that, you know, we like to think that our customers should view us as kind of an extension of their farm. Certainly the people that are the account managers that are calling on their farm and working closely with them and have the best relationship, and outside of their immediate family, I mean, you have more stake, as much stake in their farm and their success as anyone else. And,
that's correct. Yeah.
And, so that's what it's good to hear how you're such an extension of their farm.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it. Just like I did for 19 years, that harvest. It's weird that I'm not sitting in a piece of machinery that I'm operating. But either way, it's still, now I get to go to those guys and see that smile on their face when they're hammering out, you know, 85 bushel beans. And, you know, the markets aren't great, but when your yields are okay and good, and, you know, then you could start having those conversations and start poking at the plan for 25.
Yeah. Good.
No, that's, I was going to say that with the experience you have being on the other side of the fence, so that's invaluable that you could help train some of our young account managers that are coming in and maybe just ride with them and give them those cues that they need to pick up on, you know, the things that you build with experience. Yeah. But, you know, you've got a unique experience, I think, that would be valuable to
instant credibility.
Absolutely.
And that's what was nice when I transferred here and stayed pretty local, that, I mean, a lot of those guys were my friends. One was the best man in my wedding. So, you know, it's easy.
You've met.
Yeah, I've met. And, you know, so it's like moving one to another family. So,
yep.
But, and like I said, everybody's different. So you just got to switch hats and roll with it.
What else, Jeff?
Well, I was hoping you'd have a question, Sal.
But I do have one.
Well, jump on it.
What's been one of your most successes that you've had that you would think of that you've had since you've been with Premier Ag?
Well, only being here 18 months is a lot of the success I feel like I have is going on right now. So it's the success of me being organized and pushing these growers to complete this harvest, getting products on their farm that are successful. So now we're taking all that hard work from whether it's seed or chemical or some adjuvants or, you know, some other products, over the top stuff. Now we're running them. Now we're running yields and seeing if stuff paid.
That's the fun part.
Yeah. So some trials and stuff that I had out, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And they look good. So my success is taking those products and turning a profit. So,
good.
They're not all winners. You know, we know that, but, if you can get one to win in this market, then we can definitely
awesome.
Increase some stuff for next year. So.
So if you use the experience you've got in your career, you know, we're going into a period of time now. You know, we're going to see lower grain prices, grain prices cycle. You know, I just heard an economist last week that, you know, this could be a 7-8 year cycle as we go through lower grain prices. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion and, well, you know, grain prices are low and chemical and fertilizer and seed and equipment, everything's expensive. So how are you going to rely on your experience to work with your customers to help them manage through maybe some little rougher times than what they've seen for the last 4, 5, 6 years?
Don't give up. That's what I'd like to, just, you know, keep the program the same, but sit down with your account manager and really dive into some, you know, what worked, what didn't, what's new on the horizon that, you know, maybe could cheapen up. I don't like saying cheapen up, but lessen our cost, to maybe be more profitable, not as great as at $6 corn, but, you know, to still make a profit, or at least a break even. But I'm not a big fan of shortening fertilizer, keep, you know, weeds control, you know, now's the time to not skimp on anything. Keep pushing forward because, you know, you go backwards and then when things get better again, yeah. Then you're playing catch up and you're wasting more money at that point. So,
the penalty for getting it wrong is just too much.
Yeah. So, and you need to yield. So you need to yield outweigh the market. But we also need Mother Nature to play in our favor too. And right now she's not being very happy about it. But, so, you know, as I'm riding around with guys in the combines, it's those conversations, you know, just tighten the belt and, you know, watch the inputs and we're watching them close. You know, we have those conversations daily with growers, account managers, you guys, just keeping up to date with what's going on and pulling that trigger on stuff when it's right. And then just ride it out, you know, hopefully these younger guys are just kind of have to, I mean, you talk to some older guys and they're like, you know, this ain't the first time
they've seen it before.
You know, and they're still farming. So obviously their success is working for them. And they pass that knowledge down to their son or daughter, whoever's farming and, you know, just stick with the guy that is there at your place and is giving you advice, you know, because at the end, he's going to be that guy that gets you through all that. So
good.
And that's building that relationship. It's being there, answering, being on the farm, or just, you know, sometimes I get calls that they don't want to talk about farming, you know, and it's just, hey, what's going on? You know, this going on my kids and that, you know, when we're out driving around, those are easy phone calls. So
there you go.
You know, but yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah. I think when you've got, you know, reps calling you, you know, that relationship is important because there's times you don't want to talk about the business. It's like, you know, hey, the business is take care. Let's talk about something that's fun. Yeah. You know, nobody wants to drink from a fire hose nonstop. It's like, oh, it's okay. That's, you know, I know what he wants to sell me, but, to get to know the person. So,
And there are times, I mean, there are those hard conversations that you have to have, and it's not bad conversations. They're just hard. Like, hey, you know, it's time to start thinking about crop protection and what are we going to do next year? You know, so.
And it's easy to transition in those if you have that good relationship.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I knew a lot of these guys in my past life, but now, and I knew how they farmed, kind of, you know, how they ran and what kind of equipment they run. But like I said, everybody's so unique, and I never thought that the farming community was, everybody had their little quirks. And, you know, I'm pretty organized. I think I'm pretty organized. I take a lot of notes, and I keep all those little notes in my pocket. And so when I go back to, you know, hey, I'm going to go meet a guy, I pull all that up and review, you know, what ice cream he likes. What, I mean, I keep all that, just, you know, show up on the farm with a peanut butter milkshake. And, you know, sometime at some point that's going to trigger in their mind to not go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So you know what kind of equipment they like. So when you were farming and they were using the wrong color tractor, deep down you judged them, didn't you?
You judged them.
Dairy farmers, old dairy farmers, they're pretty picky. We were Massey Ferguson fans. So I don't care what the color is. I'm not a pro green, pro red. Obviously my past job, we ran a lot of K's and blue tractors, but,
Oh, you're one of those.
Yeah.
One of those.
Where, whatever gets bills paid,
you know, it's talk about old Massey Ferguson tractors and my grandpa, and that's what he had on his, and my uncles, that's what they had. Yep. Was the old, Massey Ferguson tractors. And then whenever I bought my first tractor, you know what that was a Massey Ferguson tractor.
I mean, you grow up on those. I mean, they're not well known. I mean, they're well known, but, you know, guys bleed green and red, but you know, that's what I grew up on.
So. Yep. All right. But, well, Jeff, anything else?
No, I think Ben's got a lot of things that he can, a lot of wisdom he can impart in our new young account managers. And I think we're looking forward to it. So
me too. I've enjoyed 18 months. It's been fun.
Been good.
I think I've learned more in 18 months than 42 years. So.
Well, you've taught me something here. You've mentioned your wife 3 times in this podcast. We've got to get better, Jeff.
Yeah, we can learn from Ben.
Yes,
yeah.
I already have.
A lot of wisdom.
She's a saint. I mean, you guys know that the life of a farmer, you know, the wife or the girlfriend usually takes a back seat most of the year. She always told me she was a widow between April 1st and November 1st, just because I was never there. And, you know, that was part of it. And I enjoyed that part. But she's a saint. And at some point in 19, 20 years, she just quit asking me to go to things. And now it's different. I got 2 girls at the end and they pretty much rule my world. So.
Yeah.
But no, it's good. Nope. Family's good.
So. All right.
Well, hopefully they'll invite you to things in the future.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's the community leader. He's got deep fryers, these big giant deep fryers. And this one time he was, I think over the weekend, I think he had to fry like how many hundreds of our chickens?
Church picnic, 400 chickens.
400.
Yeah. I started that, it's been probably 15 years ago. And I've turned that over to my son, just for him to make some money on the weekends. And it's kind of a hot topic in the county when I get the fryers going. So there's usually requests and it's just, you know, it's something that takes most of your Saturday and he's got time and I'd rather be doing something else at that point. But so no, it's good. And I think some of the premier guys.
Yeah, we got to enjoy that. That was right.
I have not yet, so I'll wait on my text.
Yeah,
next time the fryers come out, I expect a text.
Okay? Yeah, we'll invite
you. No problem.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
And thank you for all you do at Premier Ag and being an example for all of us. And you've certainly been successful in that 18 months, and we look forward to many years ahead.
Yep. So thank you guys. Appreciate it.
That's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. And if you like it, please like and subscribe. Thank you all very much.
Thanks.